It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another episode of the Wealth Architect Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. Today, we're thrilled to introduce Darren Davis, an industry leader, real estate entrepreneur, and founder of Club Capital with over two decades of industry leadership. And he excels in navigating market shifts and guiding investors to exceptional returns. Whether you're novice or experienced, he's ready to share insights on becoming a savvy passive investor. And we love passive investments on this show, right?
All right.
And in 2023, he launched the Never Quit Initiative, educating young adults on private equity and active and passive cash flow for financial stability. You can listen and hear his mottos, education to execution, and start now, start small, but just get started. Join us in this insightful journey with Darren Davis. Hey, Darren, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mark. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to the talk today.
I am too. I always love to talk about cash flow and passive income. I've got a program called Cash Flow Machine. So anytime somebody speaks about cash flow, it's music to my ears because it's so critical, right? There's buy and hold investing, which I call buy and hope investing. And then there's cash flow investing. And I can tell you that I think you kind of mostly need cash flow, but maybe there's room for both. But anyway, tell us a little bit about how you started and what you're doing today.
Yeah, I'll be pretty brief because I want to get to the solution part of this sooner than later. But, you know, I was out in California in the late 90s and I was busting my ass but I was making good money. But I'd gone about 15 years, you know, kind of the Monday through Friday grind, airplanes, you know, managing a team. And I literally had a couple of life events happen to me. And I took a step back and I said, I don't know what I want to do, but I want to do something totally different, totally different. And so, you know, we didn't have the internet to go do the research. And lo and behold, I was listening to a radio program and there was a speaker on there and it literally just shifted my mind almost immediately. So I took the leap and I went in with both feet. I wasn't one of those kind of guys that said, I'm just going to dip my toe in the water for 10 years and figure it out and see if I like it or not. I knew I had to make a change. And so I jumped in and self-taught. That was really, I got full board on board in 2002-03 timeframe and just started figuring it out. And fast forward to today, I've done everything from single family rentals to mini storage to obviously what we do today for the last decade plus has been multifamily, primarily here in Texas and Florida.
So, two good markets for sure.
And, yeah, we love them. We like North Carolina too, where you domicile.
Yeah, let's talk about that because, you know, there are some places in the country that are not doing so well, and there's some places that are doing extremely well, Florida, Texas, two of those markets. So let's talk about what's driving those markets and will it continue? I mean, they're hot markets still, right?
Yeah, I tell you, and I tell people, they go, gosh, y'all have done so well down. I said, look, we have a really good environment to succeed. It'd be really hard to not succeed here in all the good times. But you know, the business climate is great. Cost of living is great. It's the taxes are, you know, heading in the right direction, meaning pay less of them, you know, with the legislation that comes down, and they make it really easy to do business here. And you know, the net migration, if you take Florida and Texas, they're number one and number three in jobs. They're number one and number two in net migration. Mm. They represent, and since COVID or since the pandemic, they represent primarily the last 2-3 years, but they represent 58% of the net migration, those two states.
Wow.
So if that tells you, you know, where people are going and where they're going to need housing and where the jobs are, that alone should give you enough confidence that if you're going to look at certain areas, you know, Texas and Florida, and then right behind that is North Carolina, Georgia, you know, South Carolina, Tennessee, Utah, Colorado, a lot of those Sunbelt, Arizona, some of the Sunbelt states, but that Southeast and that Sunbelt states are just very attractive. All the demographers and the government say they don't see anything really changing other than those states leading the way and Texas and Florida being number one and number two.
Wow. And so that's the study of the past, right? So that's 58% is what just happened. Will it continue?
It's continuing right now. We still, Texas leads in net migration today. We still are net positive every quarter. We look at that. Now, is it that mass migration we had 3 years ago? No, but is it still net positive and leading the nation? Yes, it is. And people are moving here, and I see it all around me. I mean, my 10 years where I live right now here in this part of Texas, you know, I literally live kind of on a little ranch, you know, and now I have about 1,000 homes around me. And that's just been, you know, in the last 10 years. It's kind of weird because I could do a lot of things out here and nobody would know. Now I've got neighbors everywhere, but it's all for the good. It's all for the good.
Well, so what do you say to those people that say, well, we're in a bubble, you know, interest rates are up. And as soon as interest rates start coming down, that's going to make it more affordable for people that have been holding off on selling their house because they have a nice low interest rate locked in. And now they can move and get another low interest rate or a lower interest rate than what it is today. And they're not going to be so scared to move. And plus, maybe that'll make prices go higher because rates are lower. What do you think? Are we in a bubble? Is it going to go higher? Or is it going to explode?
Now here's my personal thought and opinion from my experience, because I've had plenty of that. The interest rates for housing, okay, that is impactful for people that are buying. And the average home price, I think, is in the low 400s, okay? Yes. And interest rates are a big impact. But, you know, if you look at where housing is today for first or second time buyers, like I think I've got a national number and a Texas number. I'm just going to use one of them. I think the national number is that it costs you today $1,300 more dollars per month to be in a home. I mean, to be in a home than it does to be in an apartment. And that's not including the down payment, but just taxes, insurance payments, and all that. Sure. That's hard. Okay. That's really hard. And that a lot of that's driven by supply, demand, and interest rates, those two things. The supply issue is not going away. You'll hear numbers from 4 million to 5 million. We're short on housing in the nation. We're short on housing in every state across the nation. So that supply, when we hit the financial crisis of 2007, 8, 9, 10, and we virtually cut the supply off for housing, you know, that's going to take 2 to 3 decades to catch up. And that's considering if we don't even have another recession type environment that we're kind of in right now, you know. So if you ask if it's a bubble, it's not 2007, 8, 9, when if you had a pulse, you could own 3 homes, 4 homes. Everybody saw The Big Short, you know, when they found out that the hairdresser had 7 homes, you're going, uh-oh, you know, something's wrong here. But I think for individual homeowners, it's going to be a challenge. So they're going to be renting an extra year, 2, 5. And a lot of it's not just financial. A lot of it's lifestyle. I mean, guys like you and I, you know, owning a home was a big deal, you know, back when we were 30 or something. It's right. Not that big a deal today. So, but still we have a shortage, but I don't think I don't think it's a bubble. I think it's the new norm right now. And it's going to be that way for a period of time.
So you primarily focus on multifamily. Correct. And is that multifamily townhomes where they're owning them, or is it multifamily apartments and you lease them out and do the traditional investment model?
Yeah, we're not on the for sale product. We do, I mean, our fairway is secondary markets, garden style, 3-story garden style. Yep. So we have, you know, wrap products, and it really something that you can, is kind of blocking and tackling. We want to provide nice, high quality housing, but we're not doing, you know, high rise condos downtown. And we're not doing, you know, Section 8 or tax credit type stuff. That's really some affordable stuff that's out, you know, outside of the kind of metro areas and inside. But what we're really good is working in the Class A, 250 to 300 units, economies of scale, just makes a lot of sense. And these projects are anywhere from, you know, 50 million to 80 million on each one of them. And, you know, when you start leveraging, you know, the size that you have there, that helps on the returns. And we like that space and we're pretty good at it.
What is, just curious, what is that breakdown to per unit now? Like, what's the What's the cost to build a unit these days? My dad, the reason I'm asking the question is because years ago, my dad bought some property from the Resolution Trust Corporation.
Oh, yeah.
And he spent $24,000 a door to get into market, the multifamily.
I bet he bought that in about 1988, would be my guess.
Right around there, probably 91, something like
that. Yeah, somewhere there. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting, because in my, in 10 years, I'll just give you a little time frame. In 10 years, I remember doing underwriting. I was choking on something that cost 120 grand.
Right.
And then it went to 150, and then it goes to 190. And today, I'll tell you that you can't, it's incredibly difficult to pencil out a deal that you can develop that, that you couldn't buy for replacement costs. So we're looking at acquiring a few things and developing, because that's what we do. We don't develop, we provide the equity to the developer and partner with them. We're more of the debt and equity side of it. Yeah. But I tell you what, I'm looking at three deals right now. 230, 225 a door to build. And we can probably, and we'll talk about this in a second, but you know, what's going on in the world of debt and leverage today. You know, you've got negative leverage, you've got lower valuations, higher interest rates. So people's loans are coming due and they are selling or having to sell at a lower price.
True.
So we're looking at things that we could actually acquire today, less than what we could build them for today. Now, there's going to be that 1 in 10 that makes sense to do on a development, but not 6 and 10, like we were looking at, 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
So it's expensive, but when you look at 230 a door, to build, let's just say that's our fairway. We can buy a nice 1, 2, 3 year old product for under that in a good area with some similar comps. So, we're looking at some acquisitions this year, maybe one development over the next year or two, one or two that we really like, but it's expensive right now. It hasn't leveled off just yet. We're still kind of in that don't know what to do, one foot in the door, one foot out the door, whether we hit the go button. But a lot of that's driven by, just inflation and interest rates.
Hey, it's Mark Yeager here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2-4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2-4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more.
Well, I want to ask you this question. Maybe I'll just ask you this question and throw it out there, and you can answer it in the context of where you guys come into the whole picture.
Yep.
What you do, I know you're in the debt and equity financing part of the business and the capital stack. And what is it that you do? How do you do it? And what kind of ROIs are those multifamily units we were just talking about looking at?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm going to tell you what we've done and still do, but what we're doing more of today. So our core competency is that we provide equity to developers, and we and sometimes we'll, I say debt and equity, sometimes we'll be part of the debt structure too. But I would say our wheelhouse is the equity, and primarily is for LP investors. So we'll do a syndication, find that asset, go out, develop that asset, and either sell that after it's stable, built and stabilized, and then do real well, which we did really well the last 10 years. Or there's a couple of times we actually held the asset because it was so strong, but we are the equity. Now, in the last 18 to 24 months, it was very clear to us that valuations were coming down, interest rates are going up. The leverage was not working. So we know the developer world, and what's happening to developers today is there are billions and billions of dollars of multifamily loans coming due over the next 3 years. And these guys need rescue capital. And they're coming to the end of their loans. And those loans that they bought 3 and 4 years ago that were a floating rate at 3.5%, well, now they've drawn all the money out of that construction loan, and that loan's 8% now.
Yeah.
So they're in a position where we're like, hey, we need to be able to figure out how to hold on to this asset, stabilize it, get it more mature in the hopes. And I hate that word hope sometimes, a lot of times, that interest rates will come down and pricing will go back up. And I don't know if you have that chart on kind of the evolution of the capital stack, if you want to pop that up there. If your guys want to, and I want to point something out. Let's take a look at what our world was in 20, you know, up to 2021. If you look over to the left, the typical capital stack for our LP investors were pretty straightforward. You had the senior debt, which was the construction loan, more or less. And then you had the common equity, and that's where the syndication group came in. We'd raise that money and we'd go down the road and do what we all do, and then we'd sell it and we'd all get a really good return. Well, fast forward to today, about 18 to 24 months ago, when the interest rates just started going north at warp speed, you know, for our industry or for the economy in general, valuation started coming down. So if you look on the right side, you see that the banks now are getting a little nervous. They're overextended. They said, we're going to pull back the capital that we're going to offer. And so instead of offering 75%, they were offering 50, 55, 60%.
Right.
Well, the equity on the top there is now having to fill that gap, but that equity is becoming really expensive. You know, if you've got to take, if you go from 20% to 25 to 30 to 35, that equity gets a preferred return, typically around 10%. That's super expensive for that developer. So they can't raise a ton of that. But what's happened is if you look in the middle there, that preferred equity, that's where we're filling the gap. And we're coming in and saying, okay, Mr. Developer, let us bring some short-term capital. We'll put a fixed return on it, and we'll be second in the distribution to the capital stack, and the common equity's behind us. So what's happening here is we're getting multiple requests to fund this pref equity slice, and it's really attractive because there's not a lot of, I think, real estate deals out there that I can count on that would actually give you a 12% return,
right,
short term. And you're protected by all that common equity. So the senior debt gets paid first. The pref equity gets paid second. That's us. And then the common equity is behind the preferred equity. So you've got some safety and built into that. And so that's what we're doing. And we think we'll be in that space for, you know, another 2 or 3 years, pretty active on that. And there's a couple sidebars to that, but that's just a snapshot of it. And I tell our guys, they, you know, I said, we're guys, common equity, any common equity deal I'm seeing today on a good day is underwriting at a 14%, you know, IRR. Right. Well, because it just doesn't make sense with the way the debt structures are today. I said, why would you take the risk on a 10 to 14% common equity deal when I can assure you a 12% preferred equity, short-term, contracted, and you've got all that safety behind you? And then they go, you know what? You're right. We don't know what the market's going to look like in 2 years, but if I need to deploy some of my real estate bucket money, I'm going to put it in something that is more short-term and more defined and contracted.
Makes total sense. Let me translate for those people who are driving and don't have the ability to look at that slide. Basically, up until 2021, the capital stack has been primarily senior debt and common equity. And now it's evolved to be more, I would say, less senior debt, and because of the risk profile, and a bit more common equity. But also there's a piece in the middle there that's called preferred equity. And preferred equity stands in front of common equity, but it goes behind senior debt. And so that's how the capital stack is kind of adjusted to this higher interest rate, higher risk potentially environment. And the people that are making preferred equity you say it's about 12% return, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's been our fairway. It could be it could be 12.5 or 13. It could be 11.5, but 12 is really what we're penciling out right now. And so far, we're meeting that number for our investors. And we're paying, you know, we're paying quarterly. So you're not waiting, you know, 3, 4, 5 years to get your money. You start receiving distributions, you know, at the end of Q1.
Aha. That's what I wanted to get to, is that cash flow component, right? So now we got an active quarterly cash flow component coming out. So people are standing there getting their return, but they're not waiting for the cash out refinance or the exit. They're getting the return along the way, right?
Correct. Absolutely correct. And I have to throw in this little sidebar. Okay. So this is so important. And I want anyone listening to really, if you go into a preferred equity deal, you've got to be aware or ask this question. We underwrite every deal as if we're going to own it. So we're not just throwing preferred equity to a student housing in North Carolina and something out in, you know, Utah or Denver, whatever. We're not doing that.
Okay.
Every single one of the deals that we're doing, we underwrite like we're going to own it because we may want to. All right. And here's what's happening. I want Texas and Florida. I want the same asset class we would build or buy. And I want to put my pref equity in that. Now think about this. I get courtside seats to that asset today. Sure. All right. I get to watch it finish up its construction, stabilize. And I have, in some cases, we have a first right refusal, but it doesn't always work out like that. But we're at the table today to see if that's an asset we can acquire at a discount or fair market value if it makes sense. It may make sense then, but we're in the game and we're getting paid to do this. Okay. We're getting paid to have that courtside seat at the, you know, the NBA finals is what it feels like. Cause I'm going like, this is great. So there's the strategy is not just short-term returns to the investors, which I love, but I don't want it to be one and done. I want to be in there so that I know what that asset's doing. I want to be the first person in there and potentially acquiring that asset for a long-term cash flow. So there's a method to the madness. We're not just doing pref equity and throwing it out there for every deal. We're actually wanting to use this pref equity. And I said this the other day, and I kind of realized I need to clean it up a little bit, but I said, I said Trojan horse, kind of model. And I thought, no, that's not good. The whole town of Troy was slaughtered, but I said, I want to say a Trojan horse with an olive branch. Okay. So, you know, so we're getting in there and we're saying, hey, we can help possibly, you know, we're helping today with the rescue capital. And when it comes time to sell, we're ready to do it because we've already underwritten it to buy it. So,
right.
Yeah. So that's my story.
It makes a lot of sense. Okay. So you guys are invested in the project as well. So you want to obviously see what happens, but sometimes it doesn't always work out, right? So sometimes things go the wrong way, like they did in 2008. Take us through the emotional roller coaster that we investors have, and we all go through them. I'm going through one right now. But take us through that. And for that, I'm going to throw up a slide that you sent me so that everybody can kind of talk about if you're watching.
Yeah. So for those watching, I'll kind of go through this. And I don't take credit for this. I saw Kristen Matthews at a conference, and she works for John Burns Research and Consulting. When I looked at this slide, I said, gosh, that is just, that's one picture sums up the last 20 years of my life. So I thought, you know, from an investment. So I said, okay, let's talk about this. So if you look to the left side of this, it talks about the cycle of market emotions. Okay. And we're human beings, we're emotional creatures. And if you can ever control just part of that emotion, you could put yourself in a position to do incredibly well. And everybody knows what Buffett says, you know, about, you know, your emotions and investing. And, you know, when everybody's running this direction, you go the opposite and you're probably going to do well. But in good times, if you look at this slide, you know, we're all optimistic, and we were for a decade. I mean, a long decade. And the financial risk doesn't seem real high. Money's real cheap. And we're all just having this just euphoria of excitement and great returns. Well, here comes, you know, 2021, and we start seeing the pandemic. We start seeing supply chain issues. Interest rates start happening. So we all start losing our confidence. We get fear, desperation. We start doing stuff probably we shouldn't do. You know, selling too early or buying stuff that's on a hope and a prayer. And You know, and anybody that's thrown me out an IRR of 30% and a unicorn of 10x, I'm just, you know, I turn the other way. The markets just don't look like that. But if you look to the right, we've gone through the last 2 years of kind of the fear, the depression, the panic. And I think today, if people can grasp this, I think today we're somewhere in the bottom of that trough where you kind of feel a little hopeless and you might be a little depressed about your investing or business. But what I did not do in 2010 and 11, when I knew the market was starting to go up and interest rates were coming down, I threw about 25% of my chips on the table, you know, in my investment capital. And my friends started putting money in 2012, 14, 16, just knocked it out of the park. I wish I had been prepared to take that upswing, but I waited and I waited and I waited. And I'm not waiting again this time, okay? I'm not ready to pull the trigger today, but we're somewhere in that kind of doesn't feel good range. And I don't know if that's going to last 6 weeks, 6 months. But I think it could have a 12-month kind of window in there. And I think sometime in the back half of this year, but no later than the back half of 25, you need to be really aware of your opportunities, your sponsor, your network, and be prepared to start capturing some of those opportunities that are going to be in 26, 27, 28. And there's going to be some good ones because there's a lot of debt that's coming due. And there's a lot of people that are going to have to start letting assets go at a discount or with very little profit. And that's where your guys or we or all of us need to be aware and take that ride up because it's going to happen. Not going to happen tomorrow, but it's going to happen. And I've seen it happen. And I'm not going to miss this train this next time.
So be vigilant, be ready, have your cash powder dry. And maybe and get involved with you. And so where could people find out a little bit more about what you do and how you do it?
Well, the company is clubcapital.co. In fact, you know who Karl Rove is?
I do.
Don't you remember when he pulls up his little whiteboard and he puts a little sign up there?
Yeah, that's right.
he goes, you know, and he starts drawing on it. Well, I'm not Karl Rove, but it's clubcapital.co/architect. And on that is just, it's a link to our site. And on there, there's a couple of pieces of information, especially it's called Pref Equity 101. So if somebody hasn't kind of understood or invested in a pref equity opportunity before, it kind of goes through the top 10 things about what pref equity is and the importance of it and how it benefits both the developer and the investor. And a little, not so much on our strategy, it's more of a definition.
Yeah.
But it's on there and it's good. It's a good first start. And on our site, we have a lot of information just about our company, our historical returns, the assets under management, the deals that we've done. So we have I'm proud of our track record. We've done really well by our investors. And so, and we're in a pause environment, just like everybody else. That's why we're doing pref equity, because we just don't see the opportunity outside of that. That's just clear for us right now.
Got it. Well, listen, thank you for shedding the light on your business and this market. It's it's an interesting business and market. And I can't believe that it's been basically 15 years as this hot market has continued to remain hot and probably will continue to remain hot as we go forward, as you say. So thank you so much for explaining it to us and what you do. Glad to have you here and listening to your time and wisdom here on the Wealth Architect
Podcast. Mark, I enjoyed it, man. I hope we can do it again sometime soon.
Sounds great. And for everybody listening and watching, thanks for tuning in. And remember what I always say, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. See you next time on the Wealth Architect Podcast.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.